Jesus is the only way to have peace with God. Though there is only one way to God, everyone's journey to Jesus is unique and magnificent. Here is a story of one's journey to Christ, now on Redemption Report. Welcome back to the Redemption Report podcast. Today I have a friend I met a little over a year ago, and the circumstances behind it were pretty interesting, but Buck Hill, welcome to the podcast today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, so I was mentioning just a moment ago, we met in a unique circumstance. As I remember it, my wife and I and our little one-year-old at the time, Jayla, were traveling to Colorado. Actually, she wasn't even a year old at that time, but we were on an airplane and you sat down next to us and we started talking, and that's where things got started.
Absolutely. It was January the 6th of 2023.
Yeah. So when we first started talking, I got to know you, a little bit about you and what you currently do. But would you mind just sharing kind of a little bit of what God has you doing
sure.
right now?
Well, first of all, I pastor two churches, and I tell people, when they ask me, what do? I tell people I'm a church referee. Basically, I go in to help churches that are in need, either through conflict or searching for a pastor or want to take it to the next step. We call it revitalization, going from where they were, how do they get to the next level in growth. And so just go through a whole lot of issues within the church and help them deal with that and then give them a plan to move forward.
Yeah, when we first started talking, there was a conversation about, you know, what God was doing in my life, and you really helped me open my eyes to the need for church ministry, because I'd been trying a lot of other types of ministry and still don't know exactly where God has me, but just hearing how you've been influential in different church plants and even the work that you do with those two churches is certainly great. In that, you are located up in South Dakota, correct?
Correct, South Dakota. But I covered North and South Dakota.
Okay. How long have you lived up there, or how did God get you up there?
This year, October, will be 30 years.
Okay. And how did God get you up in that area?
Well, basically, I can tell it in two different ways. One's a joke and one's not.
Okay.
one is, I'm not really smart, so I grew up in South Carolina. We were looking for that next location, and back in the old days, we had real maps, not a phone, and so I flipped the page, and the next page, it was South Dakota. So that's where God must want us, because that's where we're supposed to go. But the actuality is we went on a mission trip in 1994 and got there, and I made a joke. I did. I said to my girls, I said, girls, what if God were to call us to the Dakotas? And they both said the same thing. That's great, Dad, but we're not moving. And so we began to pray. We prayed for 30 days as a family and felt that that's exactly what God wanted us to do, is to move there and be part of a ministry in Huron, South Dakota. And so that's where we planned that, to move, and that's what we did 30 years ago.
Been there ever since.
Been there ever since.
The girls did move with you, correct?
They did.
Okay.
Yes. After the 30 days of prayer, God showed them that it was a family move, not just mom and dad. So
that's certainly helpful when obviously they're going to go with you because you have the provision aspect.
Right.
But when they want to go and they go with you as opposed to being dragged along or anything like that, that helps.
Even today, one daughter lives in Africa and the other daughter lives in Kentucky. And for the most part, if you ask them where home was, they would say South Dakota.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
That's really cool. So, Buck, when did you first hear the name of Jesus, or when was the first circumstance that you remember being presented with the idea that there is a God who is relational?
Well, I grew up in church. I mean, literally from my mother's womb, she went to church. I was there with her. And then through the old school, Sunday school, the term small groups and Bible study was not even a phrase then. But so I grew up knowing all the stories. I'd heard the gospel many times. And then one day I was approached again about, you know, do you know who Christ is? And And that day is, I remember it very well. It was when I was 10 years old. I remember that there was something missing in my life. Didn't know quite what that was. And my Sunday school teacher shared with me how to invite Christ into my heart, that it was nothing I could do on my own. It was a matter of making a decision that I was a sinner. Even though I was 10 years old, I realized I had done things, some things wrong. And that God was willing and more than willing to accept me into his family if I would just let go of me and ask Christ to come into my life.
Wow, that's really cool. So at the age of 10, when that occurred, to your memory or knowledge, you hadn't been presented with the gospel up until that point?
Probably, but I just remember distinctly that day that there was something in my spirit that said, you need to do something different. Not that I was a bad kid. I mean, I hadn't done anything to be worthy of to be considered bad, but it's just there was that spirit sense that there was something missing in my life.
Had you ever noticed that sense of anything missing prior to that? Or
no.
Okay.
So I mean, again, grew up in church, did all the, you know, all the things that kids do when they go to church. Back in the old days, 3 days, you know, you went Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night.
Right.
And then other activities for the kids during the week sometimes. So I was in church all the time. But that moment in time was I knew something was missing.
Yeah. And so did you respond right away, or did you take some time to consider the cost? Or
no. Again, another vivid memory. I think God does things in my life so I can have remembering things is that Sunday morning. After I talked to the Sunday school teacher in the traditional Baptist church, the pastor offers a time of invitation at the end of the service, and you walk down and you talk to the pastor and tell him what you've just done. And so that Sunday morning, he didn't offer an invitation that morning and told me later that he didn't feel like he preached well enough, which has played into my ministry, too. It's not about what I preach. But I just knew that really broke my heart because I wanted to go forward before the whole church and share that I had made a decision to follow Christ.
That's, I think, a good reminder for anyone who is working with people in any capacity, whether it be in a full-time ministry context or just, you know, as you sit down next to someone in a plane or anything in between. Like, God is working and we don't know, and it's, I think, sometimes to our folly if we just think God is not working.
Right.
I was recently reading a story of this guy who, his first sermon, he, I guess, got up there, his mind went blank, he couldn't read his notes because his eyes were watering, like, he muttered and stumbled through. 5 minutes later, the message was over, and he went back to the pew and dropped his head, and the pastor came up to him afterwards and said, yeah, you said like 57 times or something like that. He said, but you had a profound impact on these two girls that were in the back. They left crying, and he thought they were crying because his message was so bad and they had walked out. But it came to be that they were foster kids, and they were in a really rough situation. And the following day, they knew they were going to go back into a tough situation, but God had used his message, you know, despite all the stuttering and stumbling around and just only being 5 minutes, that they gave their lives to Christ that day. And he said, that was my worst message, but possibly my best message. And you know, God works in spite of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when did you come to know Christ? Do you remember that specific time?
When I came to know Christ?
Yeah.
It was May the 10th, 1962.
Okay. What was that? How long after that first interaction?
Oh, no, it was the same day.
Okay.
Well, I knew, despite him not having an invitation for me to respond, I knew that was the day.
That
I came to know Christ.
Okay.
I think sometimes we look at when you're baptized or when you make that public decision, but for me, I know that was the moment.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, and just you didn't have the opportunity to make it public at that point. Gotcha. Cool. So do you remember, I mean, you were only 10 years old, like you said yourself, you weren't a bad kid, you weren't involved in all sorts of crime or anything, but do you remember anything in your life changing where if you didn't know Christ, your life would have been different as a result?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I first made that decision to follow Christ, I literally went to church every time the doors were open. I wanted to gain more knowledge. I wanted to be with other people. I wanted to have the excitement of that, hey, I've got Christ now. Mm-hmm. And so I tell the story. I even went to WMU meetings, women's meetings, because there was an opportunity to be together with other believers. And so I used every opportunity that I could to be at church and to get involved mm-hmm. for a while.
All right. Well, maybe that's foreshadowing, but obviously, like when you come to Christ, especially at a young age, a lot of the sin that you commit in your life happens post-salvation, whereas, you know, sometimes there's a big stigma like, oh, I did that before I was saved, but now I'm saved, I don't commit sin. We all still commit sin.
And, absolutely.
How did your life look following your conversion at 10 years old, aside from just church attendance?
I would say it changed everything for about 5 years, six okay. years. I mean, just sold out. Everything was in that context of church and Christ and relationships and telling people, you know, what God had done in my life. So for about 5 or 6 years, I was sold out.
And then what happened?
Then I realized I was dealing with a bunch of hypocrites. These people who were the leaders, you know, when you got to 15, 16 years old, your eyes sort of opened to a different life. And so I realized that I was not going to be that person that showed up at church on Sunday and did the things I knew in my heart were wrong. So I literally stopped going to church. In fact, I didn't go to church for 20 years. Okay. Other than I called myself the Easter and Christmas Christian.
A creaster, I think, is the term
I've
heard.
Yeah, there's a term for that. So I did that for about 20 years.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that hypocrisy, I mean, that's something that people often just throw out there as an excuse, but it's very real where people can get very hurt as a result of...
I just saw the lifestyle of some of the people that were teachers and leaders, and I just said, I'm not going to go to church and pretend to be something that I'm really not. Because I grew up in a very conservative family, so till I got to 17, 18, where I was going on my own, and then I was trying some stuff I never even thought about trying. And and so it was just, I wasn't going to be that person. Still a good person, still no. Not been to jail, not done anything like that.
Very moralistic, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I knew right from wrong. I knew when I did stuff wrong, but I always had the confidence that because of the decision I made when I was 10, and this was my logic, it may not be logic, but it's mine. I said, if I died today, I still would go to heaven. I may be in a cardboard box, I may not have a mansion, but I knew that I had made that decision when I was 10 years old. But I knew I wasn't living the life that I needed to be living.
Okay.
I had a good job, had a great family, and had a nice house, you know, in a nice place, and had all the things the world had to offer till about that 20th year.
Okay. So at that point, you know, we do a little quick math, about 35 years old or so.
Yep.
What took place at that point to that God used?
There was just a situation, and I don't even know really what that was, but I just came to the point where I literally got on my knees and said, God, if you will just help me, I'll do anything you want to except quit my job and move. I had a really good job with Michelin Tire Corporation, had a nice house, nice cars, had all the things that the world has to offer, but it was just that moment in history where I knew something wasn't right. And so I said, get me out of the mess, God, and I'll do anything you want. And I put conditions. And 2 years later, I'm in South Dakota.
So maybe God was looking at the conditions and be like, oh, that is what you want. Like, that's what I need you to do. You've already identified what I'm going to call you to.
Yes. So went from, I will do anything but move and quit my job. And I quit my job and moved.
Yeah.
And went to South Dakota basically to volunteer in a church. No aspirations of pastoring a church. No aspirations of actually being in a full-time ministry position. I worked at a pig plant.
And leading up to that, you said that you'd gone on a missions trip to there.
Yes.
So you had already been up there once, kind of seen the area.
Yep.
And then you're like, well, I guess we'll move up there to try and volunteer.
And we did. We moved to that church in Huron. Sure. And that's where I was going to plant my life till Jesus came back. And that didn't happen either.
Yeah. So what led from there as far as you moved up there and started volunteering, and obviously we know, based on what you shared already, your life is very different even from that
point.
You're not still working at a pig plant. So what did God use?
Well, at the pig plant, one night a young man came to work, but I worked a night shift, and he introduced himself and said he was a member of a church about 12 miles away from Huron. And we got to know each other. Well, their pastor left, and he came to me one night and said, hey, I know you in ministry at Huron. Won't you become our pastor? And I go, no. No, God didn't call me to do this.
And you've been there for how long at this point?
About a year and a half.
Okay, so not too long at all.
Right. And so I said, nope. And went home that morning after I got off work and physically sick. Hmm. I mean, just physically sick. And then I sort of heard that internal voice that said, that was a great decision you made. There's just one problem. You didn't consult me. Hmm. And that's God speaking to me through His Spirit. So I said, okay. So I called the guy back and said, I'll pray about it. So I prayed for a week. My wife and two girls were on a vacation. It was in the summertime. And so I called them and told them to pray. And so they prayed. And long story short, I went to pastor a church.
So interesting how you have people that look for those opportunities or train themselves up. And really it's God. You know, there's that term, God qualifies the called, you know, doesn't always call the qualified, but it seems like there's a lot of some similarities or correlation with the story of Moses, where he didn't want to do what he was called to do, and God put him in that position and said, no, you're the one that I chose. And, you know, we can see His grace being evident after 30 years of you know, working and leading in a variety of contexts throughout different churches, or, you know, helping other churches be planted, or as you and I have been able to build a mentoring relationship. You share different things about pastors that you're working with, or issues that you have to consult on. That doesn't sound like a tire guy or a hog farm worker. That God has definitely grown and used a lot of that over time, and it's definitely evident of His influence on your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I tell people all the time, if God can use me, He certainly can use you. My story is, I am nobody to the world, but I am somebody in Christ. Mm.
Yeah, that's good. What would you say, since following Christ, and obviously it's been a long time, and, you know, different, you went away and then you came back, but what would you say has been one of the biggest challenges of following Christ? You know, we're told by Jesus to count the cost, that we shouldn't just follow blindly. And so if anyone was listening to this that wanted to count the cost, hearing authentically from you, what's been one of the challenges of following Christ?
Initially, it was financial. Going from a very high-paying job in 1994 at Michelin Tire Corporation to half that, to work in a pig plant.
Mm-hmm.
And going from a seniority position to a starting position, and working a normal day shift, you know, 7 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, to a 11 o'clock at night to 7 o'clock in the morning shift. So the financial side was, and my wife, she was a registered nurse, and she quit her job to take care of the girls. So we went from two incomes to half of one.
Right.
And but yet God provided every single need, probably more than we had ever had needs provided when we had money.
Mm-hmm.
So never went without, never missed a meal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just God providing in ways that doesn't make sense to the rest of the world. But mm-hmm. it goes back to what you were talking about, Timmy. When God calls you and you respond, He says, I will take care of you. Yeah. And I'll be honest, I had a couple times there that I questioned God. And I felt like Job for a while, because I can remember one instant where an engine blew in the car. No money. And I said, God, why did you bring me to South Dakota to put me in this situation? I mean, why'd you I gave up all the stuff I had to come serve you.
Mm-hmm.
And He reminded me really, really quick what He gave up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, got a phone call from a person that said, hey, I've got some money here. I don't know if you need any, but it was exactly what was needed to buy an engine and have it installed in my car. So just every time I have questioned where God is, He's always shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. Like, so many times people do see the one side of like, well, if I follow God, whether it be in ministry or vocation or just following God in my life, I'm going to have to give up stuff. But then they miss the flip side where, yeah, but I'm going to be getting so much more.
Yeah.
Or God's going to provide for my needs in ways that I was self-sufficient in my own mind before that.
Exactly. I didn't need anything from God because I had a good job. I had money. I had stuff. And what He reminded me of is that stuff is going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see Him do stuff, when you know that it doesn't make sense to the rest of the world, and you can see that, and He provides in ways that you wouldn't even think of. Just amazing to watch how He provides.
Mm-hmm.
When He said, I will take care of you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. I will take care of you. And you get to that point where you go, God, here we are. We don't have enough money for milk this week. And the milk shows up, or the money shows up, or some way He's provided a resource to be able to take care of whatever that need is.
Yeah.
So, again, I would say if God's calling you, just go ahead and say yes. I can't tell you how He's going to take care of you, but I can tell you He will.
Yeah.
For 30 years, doesn't make sense to the rest of the world. Friends I had, you know, in South Carolina where I grew up, thought we'd be here maybe a year and leave, and yet God has, in every circumstance, has provided every need at every moment.
Hmm. Yeah, we know that trusting is a good thing, but it's a front row activity. It's not something you can do from the back or front, remotely.
But trust builds upon trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you question God and He says, let me show you what I can do. And then you build on that to where you can share that with other people. Is let me tell you my circumstance where that milk wasn't there and where how He provided that situation. And even, and I know this may be crazy or not part of where, but even meeting you on the plane,
mm-hmm.
that didn't make sense.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, three people in a row, and it was a big plane going from Cincinnati to Denver, and I was on your row.
Yeah.
And what God has done in that last year and a half, it's been pretty remarkable watching how He's allowed me to interact with you and your family and how you've invested in me. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm reminded, like you said, trust builds upon trust. The story of Abraham really jumps to mind where if you follow his life out, God's the same God. We're still people. Like, we have our own unique lives and unique personalities, but God's still working in the same way. And he didn't ask Abraham to do the things that he had him do later in life at the beginning of his ministry or the beginning of his following God time. You know, if you look at like sacrificing his son, which was kind of towards the end of his life, which he had to wait a long time to get that one son, and he wasn't even sure, but he was confident that God would provide, so much so that he could go through all the way up to raising the knife to sacrifice, because he said, he knew in his mind, like, God is in control, but God didn't ask him to do that first. First, it was just, go to a land I will show you, which was difficult for him and his level of trust, but then he built on that, and then he could trust him in a variety of other ways. And I like searching out that story of every instance Abraham had to trust God a little bit more. And I see that in my own life, and like you referenced, you wouldn't be able to trust God in the ways that you do now had it not been for all those other times that have culminated to build and strengthen your trust.
Probably goes back at least 40 years of understanding that first time where I needed to trust God. He would get me out of the funk that I was in, and then the process of getting to the Dakotas and the places he's taken me in the Dakotas and the people he's put me in contact with. And how he's allowed me to do things I think are impossible, but as the scripture says, with God, nothing's impossible. All things are possible. So, yeah, he's allowed me to be able to do some pretty cool stuff and go some pretty cool places, meet some cool people.
Yeah, for sure. Since following Christ, what would you say has been one of your biggest joys that you've experienced as a result?
I think, first of all, praying for people and watching God work through a time of prayer. I think also the people he's put in my life that actually bring as much, hopefully, as much joy to me as I bring to that mutual relationship. Yeah. And being able to mentor younger people. If you see on the camera, I'm not a young man at all. but God has put in young people in my life that, for whatever reason, which always amazes me, is why some young person would want to listen to an old guy. But yet, I probably have 10 or 15 people anywhere from their 20s to their 40s that I talk to probably weekly or monthly for sure, and just talk about life and talk about family and talk about ministry. And so I would say that's probably the biggest joy, is to be able to invest in somebody who's invested in me.
No, that's really good. If you were to leave one takeaway for or someone listening to your story and say, I want to leave you with this, what would that be?
I think the trust in God in all circumstances would be the one thing that if he calls you, he will equip you. Because I can tell you from, if you didn't hear this earlier on, I am a high-functioning introvert, just who God made me. But that just shows you he can take anybody and you. So if you're thinking, I can't, trust me, you can. If God calls you, he will put you in places, again, and hear this, if you don't hear anything else, hear this, for his glory. Yeah. Not for yours, not for mine, not for Timmy's, but for his glory. Yeah. And so that's how I look at my life. He's taken somebody like me, put me in a place, in a position to have influence. And again, it's for his glory, because people who know me, and they go, eh. But they see that God can work even in my life. So if God's calling you, say yes. I promise you won't regret it.
No, that's a wonderful way to leave it. And I'm so thankful that you took the time to come on and share. And I've, like you were talking about the mentorship aspect, I've been very blessed to be able to not only just meet you, but to have that relationship continue on, even though it is out of state and exclusively or primarily on the phone and whatnot. But I've told you this before, but just publicly, like, wanted to thank you for how you've listened, and I've been able to see you search God or seek God together with me. And I'm sure that's how it carries over to other relationships that you have, where you're in a position where you know of needs and you're trying to find how to fill those needs based on the job and the role you have. But other people I've worked with or interact with, they're always trying to, oh, I have a need, you're available, let me try and shoehorn you in. But you've been a really good example of listening to God and saying, okay, well, let's see what God has today, not necessarily what I thought I was yesterday, but like, where does God have us today? And that's led us a variety of different ways evaluating different things. But I think what that's done is it's helped me grow. And I think you've mentioned as well, it's helped you grow. And,
absolutely.
You know, we don't want to ever get to the point where we think we have God figured out. And so as we all grow and mature, that's something that I have definitely taken away from you and your style of leadership, mentorship, friendship is listen to God on a day-to-day basis and not try to have everything figured out or just, well, you didn't do what I said, so it must be you're in the wrong. And, you know, it's like, no, let's not think evil or let's believe all things and let's see, okay, no, I can see that now too. And there's been several of those conversations where it's like, yeah, after saying that or after hearing that or after talking to you about that, I'm reevaluating or I'm rethinking. That's been so wonderful for me to be able to see someone who's further ahead of me in this walk of life and relationship with God to say, oh, that your heart's still tender, that you're still open and not just, I think it's easier the longer we do something, whether it be life, the older we get, or just doing something that we get kind of set in our ways or just hard. And it can be a challenge, but I've been thankful that that's by and large been different with you.
Yeah. I tell people all that I'm still learning. I'm still growing. God's not done with me yet. I know that 100% because I learn things every day. And I think he's allowed me to help communicate that. Like with you, is you realize I've not, oh, well, I've done this for 30 years now. I've got it. So you need to listen. So, no, I learn from listening.
Mm-hmm.
I learn from doing. I learn from experience. And so I want to be able to pass those new learning experiences on too as well.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you again taking time to share your story, and I believe God was glorified through the sharing of it. It was such a privilege to share the story of one of my mentors with all of you today. Buck's story reminds me of the instruction that Paul writes to Titus, which says, "Older men are to be self-controlled, worthy of respect, sensible and sound in faith, love, and endurance. In the same way, encourage the young men to be self-controlled in everything. Make yourself an example of good works with integrity and dignity in your teaching." These verses are found in chapter 2 of Titus. Buck's relationship with Christ enables him to regularly pass along wisdom and encouragement from his own growth and experience to multiple young men in ministry, and I'm so thankful to be one of them. In the next episode, we'll hear from Christine Langford and how Christ redeemed her life. Be sure to check out tweareproductions.com for more content and ways to contact me directly. See you next week on Redemption Report.